Thank you. Please be seated. All right, before we turn to God's word, for those of you who were not here this morning, I mentioned the latest issue of Reformation Zambia that's come out. It's the 36th issue, which suggests that the Lord has continued to keep us in print. As you know, you don't find Christian magazines in Zambia unless you are thinking in terms of the Watchtower, but that doesn't qualify. Here is the magazine that teaches the truth from Scripture. This particular issue is vital. It deals with the Word of Faith movement, which affects all of us. I'm almost certain that you have been told by people that you must never say, "I'm sick," for instance. I'm sure you have. That to say you are sick is to bring a curse upon yourself. So you must keep saying over and over again, even if it's aching, that "I'm okay, I'm healed in Jesus' name," and so on and so forth. And because of that, a lot of innocent people have actually died, because by the time they are being taken to the hospital, it is too late for doctors to do anything about it. There's a lot of that. This issue deals with that matter. And I do want to encourage you, because, you know, often we tend to buy magazines like this for 10 kwacha for ourselves to read. Try and learn to do a little more than that. In other words, buy a number and give them to friends who are struggling with this issue. For instance, one of the chapters deals with, it's entitled "The Most Abused," Proverbs 18, verse 21. Again, it's that verse that says life and death is in, you see? You've heard that phrase being thrown around, that it's in the power of the tongue. Again, this magazine seeks to help put that into perspective. Our pastors have labored hard to put this together, so you have not only Pastor Sunkutu, but also Pastor Emmanuel Sakala, and Pastor Oswald Sichula, and Pastor Raphael Banda. They've sought to lock horns with this matter. And so, as I said, get a number and give them to friends, so that if they genuinely are seeking for truth, they might find it. And then secondly, the deacons have brought back the results of the vote. Just in case. Okay, thank you very much. So, Nigeria, we are ready for you. And the elders would like to thank you, because the vote was 100%. And so we are grateful for that level of confidence that as a church you have given to our brother, and indeed to the elders as we move forward. We have already begun sending the information back to his church in the United Kingdom and to him in Nigeria, and we'll soon also be sending that message to those that are prepared to give funds for this project. So again, a hearty thank you for your confidence. Let's turn then in our Bibles to Romans and chapter 12, Romans chapter 12, and we will be looking this afternoon at verse 13, But as usual, I want us to begin with verse 9. If you are there, Romans 12 and verse 9. Let love be genuine, abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. And then the passage we are looking at together. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Well, brethren, for a number of months now, we have entered into chapter 12 of the book of Romans. And I have said again and again that it is a major watershed in the writing of the Apostle Paul. That up to the end of chapter 11, the Apostle Paul was concentrating on what we refer to as indicatives. In other words, things that are true about you as a Christian. That's what he concentrated on. And it's an important springboard from which you are able to go into the imperatives. In other words, the things that you ought to do because these things are true of you. It's a very simple equation. It's the kind of thing that would be said, for instance, if you are playing with your friends and you are a school boy or a school girl, but your friends are not in school. The first thing that your parents will say to you is, you are a school girl. Therefore, go and get ready. I need to take you to school. So you are first told as to what you are, who you are, and then on the basis of that, you are told what to do. And consequently, because it makes sense, you are willing to part ways with your friends because you realize they are not what I am. And consequently, let me do something even if they are not doing it. That's really the watershed that you find between the first 11 chapters of the book of Romans and then chapter 12 to chapter 16. In the first 11, we are being told you God has made you Christians. And the Apostle Paul really opens that up so that you are overwhelmed at how much God has done to make us what we are. And then from there, he springs to say, in view of this, present yourselves or your bodies as living sacrifices. And you will see that it only makes sense. We've already seen quite a bit about the first thing we ought to do, making ourselves a living sacrifice. We've also seen a lot concerning its application in the context of the church, so that each one of us finds a specific area of usefulness according to the gifts that God has given us. And then, from verse 9 downwards, we have been looking at the most concentrated passage of imperatives in the whole of the Bible. We've seen a lot already. The statement, let love be genuine, I have said that it could be translated that way, but it could also simply be translated as love must be genuine, or love is genuine. You can't have it any other way. The moment there is self-centeredness in love, it is no longer love. Love is about doing good to others. Love is an outward energy seeking to bless those whose lives it touches. And in many ways, beginning with verse 9 all the way to verse 13, it's all about love, about this energy called love. We can even take it further into verse 14 downwards as we begin to bless those who curse us and bless and not curse and so on. As we rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Again, clearly, it can be seen as this energy called love oozing out of us and touching many people's lives. God has loved us. Therefore, we ought to be loving towards others. Last week on Friday, not the last Friday, but the previous one, I went with Mr. Francis Kaunda and one of the interns to Andrew Mlendema's widow. And as we handed over the gifts of your love to her, she broke down and cried. She was completely overwhelmed by the energy that was coming from here. And I've never forgotten, she said, today was the last day that our child was to be allowed in school without paying fees, and we had nowhere to get those fees. Nowhere. And she has said she's coming on her own. She's coming here to come and say thank you. It's love going out because we ourselves have been loved. And really, that's what we are dealing with today, isn't it? When it says, contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. The Apostle Paul is teaching there that love must express itself through generosity, and it must express itself through hospitality. You cannot shut it in. It finds a loophole. It goes out and consequently touches other people's lives. The reason is quite simple. The Christian faith is a religion of love. That's what it is. A religion of love. It's not one in which you are wrapped up in your own little problems, and consequently you cannot see anything with respect to the needs of others. We all have our problems. And as Paul said earlier, there is the issue of tribulation in our lives. And it does not snuff out hope. It in fact causes us to be patient and to pray. But beyond that, concerning ourselves, we are still concerned about others, primarily because God has loved us. And because he has loved us, we cannot help but love him back. And not only love him, but also love his people. So let's look at this verse for a moment and appreciate these two avenues through which genuine love will express itself. First of all, it is through meeting the practical needs of real people. Meeting the practical needs of real people. The Apostle Paul says here, contribute to the needs of the saints. Two quick points. First of all, you will notice that he's referring to the saints. And by saints, he simply means fellow believers. That's what he means. The kind of people that you meet with when you go to church, and they're sitting with you in the same pews. The kind of individuals that will come from afar, and they come and they are among you, the people of God. or the kind of people that may be afar, but the news about them comes to you, and you know that they are fellow believers. Those are the ones being referred to. Does it mean we must not contribute to the needs of people beyond that? That's not what Paul is saying. But in this particular passage, he's particularly interested in the fact that as Christians, we are a family. And the Bible is full of the one another passages. We are to be patient towards one another. We are to pray for one another. We are to love one another. We are to be kind towards one another, etc., etc. And this is but one of them, that we are to contribute to the needs of one another. Again, the reason is quite simple. It is the fact that in the church, among God's people, there is complete variety. You will have, for instance, those who are poor financially and economically. So their need will be primarily financial. You also have those who are aged. They've become very old, and consequently, they are unable to look after themselves. They will have their own peculiar needs. And again, as you are with them, you will see that surely you ought to do something for them. There will be those who are crippled, those who might be blind, those who might be deaf and dumb, etc., etc. In other words, in the realm of physical infirmities, they will also have their peculiar kind of needs. And then there will be the sick. Simply not so much in terms of long-term infirmity, but in that particular period, they are unwell, they need medical attention. It might be in terms of finances to pay for medical attention, or it may be in terms of while undergoing such a period that other people are meeting their needs. Or it might be the widowed and the orphaned. There it may be an issue of finances, but it could also simply be an issue of presence. In other words, other people being present and consequently reducing the sense of loneliness. But often, especially with respect to orphans, it is financial. It could also be individuals who are jobless. They may have had employment for a while, but that employment has ceased. They are still looking for employment, but they don't have employment yet. Again, they may be coming to church, you may be saying hello brother and hello sister and so on, but in actual fact they are coming from a home with an empty fridge. Again, that's a need that you could be thinking about. Let me throw in one more. And in throwing in one more, I'm not suggesting that I've been comprehensive. I'm simply, as it were, giving you examples so that we are not thinking that needs are necessarily all financial. They often are, but sometimes they can be of different sorts. Another form of need is when people are being persecuted. And often the need is emotional because they are distressed as they are being falsely accused, as they are suffering from insulting language, And perhaps even the furthest, which is that their lives, their very lives, are at stake. And as you know, in the New Testament church, this was a present reality. Christians were constantly under persecution. Now, friends, these are constant needs among the people of God. Various needs, but they are always there. The world's attitude towards needy people is simple. Don't associate. That's the world's approach. Don't associate with them. Rather, you always want to relate to those who are in your bracket. That's the world. So if you're wealthy, you want to be with the wealthy. If you're healthy, you want to be with the healthy. If you have a good job, you want to be with those who have a good job. If you have dad and mom, you want to be with those who have dad and mom. If you are with a spouse, you want to be with those who still have a spouse. We tend to be like that and keep away from those who have needs one way or the other. In fact, often we want to relate to people who will benefit us. So you sort of go up the scale. That's the company you want to keep so that a few things can come down your way, rather than with those who are below you, because it means it's you who must be giving. In the church, brethren, it ought to be different. And that's what Paul is saying here. He is saying that we should be like Christ, who, though he was rich, for our sakes became poor, that we might be rich. Now, as you know, that's not simply speaking financially, although people in the prosperity gospel tend to meditate and go that way. But clearly, he was bringing us into sonship in God, where all things are yours because you are Christ and Christ is God's. And consequently, we are entering into something of his spiritual richness. But the point nonetheless is this, that he took the time and the trouble to come down and be with us. And consequently, as he blesses our lives, we are to turn around and say, who can I bless also? So whereas the church, rather the world, tends to be a cup, in fact, a very big cup, where whatever is being thrown into somebody's life is being kept there, and consequently is just building around the edges of that cup so that, you know, things are not spilling out. In the Christian church, we are a pipe. We are a vehicle through which other people get blessed. That's what we are. We are a channel of blessing, of God's blessing to others. And consequently, we contribute to the needs of others. Now, two quick points about this before we move on. First of all, it is the fact that some believers are gifted in generosity. Notice this in verse 8. He had said in verse 6, having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. Okay? We've got different gifts. And then halfway through verse 8, he says, the one who contributes in generosity. In other words, it's possible to be so gifted in giving and contributing to the needs of others. And thank God for such giftedness. Thank God for it. For the kind of person who just never seems to see that he needs more than he has and is constantly, consequently giving. Having said that, and this is important, brethren, it does not excuse the rest of us. In other words, when Paul had spoken of the gift and said, the one who contributes in generosity, remember, he comes back to this issue and says, contribute to the needs of the saints. And he is not saying, some of you contribute to the needs of the saints. It's a blanket statement for all of us. So you don't sit there saying, wow, you know, this brother or this sister, you know, is really given to giving, to generosity and so on. That's where we all tend to be running and so on. The question is, what about you? Because we can all meet some need of other people. We all can. As I said, for some people, it might be financial giving. For you, it might be time. That's all. Time. Being able to spend time with those that need company. Or perhaps it might be the fact that a wife in a home is unwell. I think that's something that's happening right now. And consequently, you divide out a roster and you say, okay, you know, we will be helping with food here, there, and so on, so that she's not thinking about cooking. But it could simply be that this is the way I go when I'm taking my children to school, and all I need to do is to go an extra mile to be able to take my friend's children to school, who at this stage needs such help. You are contributing. It may not be financial, but it could be in many other ways. It could be someone who simply needs a hand. They are lame or they are blind, and consequently their need is somebody to walk them to the appropriate place where they need to get to. We had a sister once upon a time, she's still around, but the need was greater then, who was involved in a major car accident. And consequently, when she had enough strength, somebody would be picking her up and bringing her to church and helping those very unfriendly staircases that we have out there by parking the car right in front and helping the person to come into church until they were better. Again, it's not financial, but it is seeing there is a need and how can I play a part. So brethren, those who are gifted, yes, they shall stand head and shoulders above the rest of us. They will. But it doesn't mean that the rest of us sit down. No. Yes, there might be Mount Kilimanjaro's standing in front of us. But we too should stand as little anthills. We should also stand in order to help. So you can be assured that I won't mention the amount of money we gave to the lady. We'll do it in the members' meeting this coming Saturday. But you can be sure that some people gave in overabundance, that if you were to get to know how much they contributed towards that total figure, you'd be bowled over. But it doesn't mean that the rest of us should give nothing. No. Because you could go into your pantry and say, well, let me get this 2 liters or 2.5 liters of cooking oil and commit. Or this packet of sugar and commit. By the way, we took quite a lot of such things over to her home as well. So it's not competition. It is each one according to his ability. But certainly, this is a command for all of us to have our antennas up and realize that we are in a needy world. And we should be on the lookout for it in this needy world. That's the first. And the simple plea there is be deliberate. Be deliberate in contributing to the needs of the saints. Be deliberate. See it as the outworking of your love, the love of God in your soul. Be on the lookout. The Apostle Paul doesn't just speak about contributing to the needs of the saints. He also says, and seek to show hospitality. In other words, this energy called love must express itself also in this practical way of hospitality. Now, this is not another area of specific application. No. It is simply zeroing in further in this same area of contributing to the needs of others. I say this because our modern understanding of hospitality can be quite unfortunate, because we tend to think of hospitality in terms of maybe a wife in the home who decides to cook a bumper meal enough to feed the whole city and then bring in a few friends. And, you know, you sort of all eat and eat and eat until you can't even drive back home. When you get home, you sleep like a tadpole upside down. And you say, wow, that lady is hospitable, man. Hospitable. That's not what this means. The word hospitable in the New Testament is actually a phrase that has two parts to it. It is philo, which we all know is love, phileo, and it is also xenia, which is easy now for us to know because of xenophobia. And xenophobia is a fear or hatred of strangers. So philoxenia is a love of strangers. That's what the word means in Greek. So as you can see, there's nothing in it about eating until you sleep like tadpoles. There's nothing there. There's nothing in it, in fact, about eating and cooking. It's about loving strangers. Loving strangers. And for the New Testament church, this was a very real need. Primarily because they were in a period of intense persecution. And consequently, believers often had to abandon everything in their particular towns or cities to flee to places where there was safety. And consequently, they would arrive in your city, arrive in your church, and yes, they are believers, but where will they sleep? Where will they live until the time they are able to get some form of employment, until the time they have at least one period in which there is rain and plowing and sowing and harvesting, and consequently they can have their own food. Between now and then, what happens? They are strangers. They've not been around for long. They've arrived, and they are among you. So it was very important for the Christian church to realize that we've got brethren among us who have this peculiar need of shelter and food. Of shelter and food. And often shelter included clothes. Until they can find their own feet. That's what it was all about. The Apostle Paul is urging us as Christians. Of course, he was urging the early church here that they ought to be characterized by a love for strangers. Now, it's interesting that the Apostle Paul doesn't say contribute to the needs of the saints and show hospitality. That's not what he says. He says contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. That's interesting. What he's saying there is amounting to this. Don't wait to be asked. Don't wait for an announcement that there are some people that have arrived who might need a home, a shelter, a place to be, and so on. Is there anybody who can deal with them and provide? And so on. He's saying, don't wait for that. Instead, you must pursue it. You must chase after hospitality or the love of strangers. In other words, here you are, you are at church, you're going out, and you notice some strange faces, brethren in the Lord that you don't know. And so it's you who immediately want to offer. They haven't even begun asking. No announcement. But it's you who's already saying, so where are you staying tonight? Can you come over and be at our home until whatever? It's you taking the initiative to meet their need for shelter, for food, and for clothing. We have an example of this in Genesis and chapter 18. Let's just quickly go there. Genesis chapter 18. It's to do with Abraham. Genesis 18. I want you to notice his initiative. His initiative. And I also want you to notice the zeal with which he deals with this matter. Chapter 18, verse 1. And the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing in front of him. When he saw them, listen to this, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, O Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree, while I bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant. So they said, do as you say. And notice again, and Abraham went quickly. I mean, you can't miss the zeal, the energy in order to do what he wanted to do. Abraham went quickly into the tent to Sarah and said, quick! I mean, you know what quick means? It means quick. There you have it, quick. Three seers of fine flour, knead it and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to a young man who prepared it. And even there, quickly, he must have told him also, quickly. Use a pressure cooker or something. You know, we need to have this quickly. Verse 8, Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared, and he set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree while they ate. Now, that's a good example of this. It's not waiting to be asked. And even when you are asked, you say, well, we just need to sort of consult one another as husband and wife, and we'll get back to you. When? Well, we'll see when we'll get back to you. 7 days later, any hope there? Well, yeah, but hasn't anybody offered yet? That's not the issue here. The issue is you pursuing it. You fighting over being the first to show your love for strangers. That's what it is all about here. And brethren, as African middle-class believers, we need to face this issue straight on. Because we have this mental view that in order to meet the needs of strangers like this, you must have an 8-bedroomed house and each bedroom self-contained with, 5 fridges that are all full to the point where, especially the deep freezers, you're even having problems to close the cover. Then, yes, let's get in the visitors and help them out. That's just somehow the way we think. And God needs to help us to break through this pride, because it's really pride. We want to show off to our visitors that we are well off. And so we've thrown away that phrase that I heard as a 9-year-old boy when my mom died and we were taken to the village in Kawambwa. And that's where my grandfather lived. And my grandfather was a little more well off than my grandmother. They had divorced by then and she was in Imbereshi. So we sort of enjoyed top-notch hospitality in Kawambwa. Now we were to transfer to Imbereshi. And my aging grandfather called us aside and said to us in Bemba, it amounts in English as the guest of a monkey eats what a monkey eats. And then he said to us, do you understand? And of course we didn't. We're 9, 10-year-olds. What have monkeys got to do with us? So he explained that you came to my home, you were eating what I eat. Now you are going to your grandmother. Don't go and compare. Eat what she eats. That's over 40 years ago. This boy still remembers that quiet talk with grandpa. But that's what we need to get back to. To recognize that it's not about showing off that we are actually not even middle class, we are upper class. Look at what we have. But it's to say, well, what we have is what they'll participate in. Because that's what we have. And they are in need. Therefore, let them come and share what we have. Now, this is a hard nut to crack. Because a few years ago, I preached sermons on hospitality. And the reason why I preached that series was because we were struggling. Even when we would make an appeal saying, look, we've got visitors, anybody to provide accommodation? Zero. So I did 17 sermons. Can you imagine? 17. Appeals after that, zero still. It's hard ground to crack. We tend to think that we must give our palace for people to come in. So that even when they're going away, they are saying, wow, it was like Southern Sun International. So until we can reach there, we are not. Let them perish. That's wrong. That's wrong. We ought not to be like that. Remember, it ought to be energy. That's the issue. Energy that's oozing out. Sadly, sometimes you can have a very hospitable husband. The problem is the wife. Christian wife, yes, but Christian wife. So even when the husband is saying, look, you know, you can even see from the expression of the wife saying, what are you saying? But you know, there isn't this, there isn't that. And, you know, so just for the sake of peace, it's not, I was just saying that they are here, but they hope to go there. Because again, the wife wants to show that, you know, Eifwe, we are they who have everything. And therefore, I cannot attend to those needing shelter and food unless you have supplied in bumper supply within. Again, brethren, that's not Christian. Here is a statement that is to all of us, husband and wife, outdo one another in showing hospitality. Fall over each other in order to meet those whose peculiar need is shelter, clothing, and food. That's what Paul is saying here. You see, the problem when it's not energy, and that's where I keep going back to, that Christianity is love. It's energy oozing out. The problem if it's not energy oozing out is that you can be hospitable on the outside, but inhospitable in your heart. So you really don't want, but pressure has been brought to bear on you. I've told this little story before, which is probably not real, but it drives home the point of the visiting preacher who was coming to town, and consequently the appeal being made to the church as to which family can host the preacher on Sunday, which is a fairly common thing. Even at KBC, every so often, we have these embarrassing situations where we do have a guest preacher, and we've tried every door. We've knocked, 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 and all we need is somebody to keep the preacher between morning service and evening service. That's all. And after knocking on 10 doors, we finally just give up. Give up completely. Well, in that particular story, one family was squeezed into going with the preacher home. And upon getting to the home, the wife and husband were preparing the meal, and the man was playing with a little girl in the home, and he genuinely asked the little child, do you know who I am by name? Do you know what mom and dad, oh yes, that's the question, what mom and dad will be preparing for lunch? Yes, that's the question he asked. And the kid innocently said yes. I know, because as we're going to church, Mom said to Dad, remember, we'll be having that old pig for lunch today. It was not in the pot. The old pig was the preacher. The man realized the attitude that was really there. That although they were busy cooking his food, their attitude towards him was this: he's a pig that is among us. Again, brethren, we can be like that, where really we are forced into it. Especially a phone call from an elder saying, you know, can you keep this visitor? You know, as Africans, it won't look nice to say no. It won't look nice. So you fulfill the task, but really, there is no love oozing out. There's no love oozing out. And that needs to be corrected, brethren. It needs to be corrected. We ought to be a people who are deliberately doing something in order to be hospitable. Let me use an obvious example here. Lusaka has first become the center for tertiary education. Students are leaving their corners of the world to be in Lusaka. A lot of them fill these pews on Sunday morning. They are the strangers that have come. Are we reaching out to them? Are we? Are we sort of saying, you know, who are you? Where have you come from? I've come from Kaputa. What are you doing in Lusaka? Well, I'm now at Apex. Kaputa, Apex. So, like after church, where are you going? Do we go that far to realize that here's somebody who could do with knowing a Christian home in town and consequently having a home away from home, especially when there is midterm break, when schools close and one needs to leave their goods before undertaking this hell run back to Kaputa for the holidays. And the short supply halfway through a term, when they squeeze those toothpaste containers until even the container starts complaining that, look, I have nothing more. They've tried the toothbrush going through after it's flattened. And yet our pantries have more than enough. Does it cross our minds? Because it should. That this is a place where strangers will be in their hundreds of thousands. This town. And we cannot afford to simply come to church as a nice, happy family, and disappear back home as a nice, happy family, and then the following week, and then the week after, and then the whole year, and so on, and we are submerged with strangers. 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 Many ought to say, I thank God I was a believer and a student. And in Lusaka. I thank God. I always remember as a very young Christian being taken to a home by, I won't allow you to take away his reward in heaven. And this man, on a Sunday, with his wife. They take me to their home. And while we're having lunch, he comes with a suit and says, "Conrad, try it on." Believe you me, it was my first suit in my entire life. Can I forget such a man? My first suit from a complete stranger at church who wanted to bless me. I thank God I was in a church when I was a student. I thank God. Let's quickly close then. What the Apostle Paul is urging us, brethren, is to do what Jesus says he will reward. And Jesus puts it this way, and with that I must close. In Matthew 25, you don't need to turn there, and verse 35. I begin from verse 34. "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me.' And the righteous will answer, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?' And the king will answer them, 'Truly, I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me.' I was a stranger, and you welcomed me." Brethren, perhaps what we need to do today is to say to the Lord, "Take my life, take my everything, take my silver, take my gold, take my lips, take my everything, and make it yours." Perhaps that's what we need to do, that we may become real Christians. That people who come among us, when they go back wherever they come from, they should be able to say they found love at KBC. They did. Because their practical needs were met by fellow believers. Let's really ask the Lord that he takes everything that we are. Amen.